We live in an era where chefs have become personalities, corporate moguls, brand names. For instance, you've undoubtedly heard of Emeril, as in the chef named Emeril Lagasse. Well, he sold his brand name and other parts of his food empire recently for $50 million. But NPR's Daniel Zwerdling spent the morning with an acclaimed chef who has followed a different path. Danny joins us in our studio. Good to see you again.
Thanks for having me, Leanne. Good to be here.
Danny, why don't you tell everybody without further ado, who's the chef, where was he cooking, and what was he making?
I love this story. The chef's name is Steve Bett, and I joined him as he and a group of volunteers were making a six-course breakfast for more than 200 homeless people. Bett actually used to cook in trendy restaurants, the sort of places, Leanne, that were reviewed by the New York Times and the Washington Post, got very good reviews. In fact, Bett dreamed that he would run his own restaurant someday.
Just like Emeril.
Exactly. Except that one day, Steve Bett walked right out of the restaurant world. He quit. And he decided his new mission is to run a soup kitchen. They're in the basement of a church here in Washington, D.C. It's about 1 mile from the White House. And they call the program Miriam's Kitchen. I got there at about 6 a.m.
Oh, Jim, so go through this donation from the farmer's market. You want to sort through the bad greens. You see those?
And Steve Bett was already supervising 8 volunteers. He signs up hundreds of volunteers during the year as a sous chefs. Maybe we're in a church, but this looks like it could be in a restaurant. Huge restaurant stoves, gargantuan pots.
Just start to break it with your hands. Look for the stuff you would eat at home. Dump it in the water. Spin it, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, fine.
It's hard to get Steve Bett to stand still. He's small and wiry. He's always jiggling like a steel spring. They've got less than an hour now to cook breakfast. Homeless men and women are already pouring into the dining room on the other side of the door. They come mainly for the breakfast, but they often stay to get blankets or soap or referrals to drug rehab. They sometimes even find a job.
So the menu will be omelets, and Chris is making some omelets, and the omelets have sautéed mushrooms and ham, onions, and some farmer's market cheese. We'll have stone ground grits, some homemade home fries that we do here that are really popular. We'll have a farmer's market green salad. We're going to do like a strawberry shortcake.
This is for the breakfast, right?
This is for the breakfast.
Yeah, okay, full disclosure. Is this really a typical breakfast here, or is this like special because we happen to be here?
This is a typical breakfast. You know, we're trying to treat the homeless here, the clients, the guests we serve, with dignity. And I switch back and forth, clients, guests, because we do call them clients, but at the same time, I always try to tell volunteers to think of it as a guest coming into your home.
So what clicked in your brain, or maybe in your heart, that you dropped your fantasy of becoming chef of your own restaurant and you decided to work for a homeless kitchen?
I remember the moment clearly. My wife, who was my girlfriend at that time, basically said, it's the restaurants or me. It was very hard to have a good relationship and at the same time think about a future family with those type of hours. And so at that point I said, okay, restaurants aren't going to work, but I wanted to figure out how could I merge my restaurant experience to wanting to kind of help people. You know, it's funny because my mom, I think, in some ways, still doesn't understand what I do. It's often like, so you're serving the homeless? Why did I send you to college? Jim, when you're set up, can I have you start the biscuits?
Sounds great. Good.
Why do you get pleasure out of helping homeless people? Why do you want to serve them?
I think when I was in high school and when I was in undergraduate, you know, I would see a homeless person on the street. And I was someone who go, get a job, or like, you're choosing to be homeless. But, you know, I started to learn their stories. I mean, here are people who suffer from a lot of mental illness, possibly drug and alcohol addiction that stem from possibly losing their job, family breakdown, and I realized that once you're down and out and once you're on the street, it's so hard to get back on your feet. So my energy comes by the fact that, wow, if I can start these guys off with a great meal and a nutritious meal, will that increase the odds that maybe they'll get housing, that maybe they'll get off drugs, that maybe they'll have a good day?
And do you think these grits and these home fries and these omelets today will help somebody get a job and get an apartment, get a...
Oh, yeah. When I talk to some of our guests outside as they're leaving, they come up to me and they'll say, oh, that was an awesome meal, great job. And they're smiling and they're laughing. And I'm not saying that the food made them smile or laugh like as a direct connection, but it's part of the puzzle.
1 second.
Oh, Jim, you don't want to over-knee these biscuits okay. Or you're going to get rocks.
All right.
Can you tell me who you are and what you're doing here?
Sure. My name is Jim Hahn. I volunteer here. I've been here about 4 years. I'm an economist for the Congressional Research Service.
Do you realize you were just on the verge of making those biscuits too tough?
I'm glad that Steve caught me before I did that.
Omelette's coming out. Annalisa, can I have you stop what you're doing, wash your hands? You're going to go on the line.
What are you doing now?
Well, we're getting the line open up. We open up in like 5 minutes, so now is really kind of the crash and burn time. Just like a restaurant where you're trying to get ready for the doors to open up.
So you're setting up the cafeteria line.
Sure, exactly.
Sort of like a school lunch cafeteria.
Yes. Hopefully better food.
Now, I notice you have this rolling door shut so that the clients can't see as you're organizing in the kitchen. Why is that?
Then there's that kind of that dramatic, we open up the doors and...
Numbers 1 through 120. Numbers 1 through 120.
Good morning, sir. Potatoes or grits?
No grits, please.
Got it. Good morning, sir. Potatoes or grits?
It ain't breakfast without grits.
All right.
Tell our listeners about Miriam's Kitchen, sir.
Well, it's the greatest breakfast in the city. They treat you like you're a human being, not like a third-class citizen like the city does. This is the best place in town.
Where did you sleep last night?
Well, if I tell you where I sleep at, I'll be harassed by the park police, the city police, and every other police department in the city because they're trying to sweep homelessness under the rug.
Is it all right for us to use your name?
Yeah, my first name is John, and my middle name is Robert, and my last name is McDermott.
Good morning, sir. You know who you remind me of? Charles Bronson, the famous actor.
I've been told that before, but I've got to get my stuff so the other people can eat too. Is this National Public Radio? You guys are real professionals.
I appreciate that. Before I forget, tell us your name, please.
Oh, they call me Mr. C here. I go to an anonymous organization for my drinking. So we're going to leave it at Mr. C, okay?
I noticed that when you're in the food line, they all offer you lots of choices.
Hey, beautiful. They give you that choice. I mean, this is actually the supreme part of Washington here.
Good morning. What kind of omelet can I get you?
I'm having the omelet with mushrooms and ham.
You know, I always tell volunteers I try to run this like a restaurant kitchen. And what I mean by that is the tension that's in a restaurant kitchen in terms of exacting precision in terms of what we're doing. So if I see a volunteer being a little sloppy with something, I said, would you buy that item at a restaurant where you just paid, let's say, $20 for some high-end brunch? And they'll go, no. I said, so why are you making this for our clients and our guests out there? And they should look outside in the dining room and they should say, wow, these are paying customers and I want to be perfect.
But I need to tell you something that might hurt your feelings. I asked one of the gentlemen, what he thinks of the food here. He said, on a 0 to 10 scale, 8.
Well, that's pretty good. But, you know, it's funny. I get yelled at every week by some clients who go, those omelets were overcooked. Or, you know, who taught you how to make those strawberry shortcakes? That's not a shortcake. So it's funny that as we've raised the bar on the type of food we do, they have raised their level of criticism as well. It should push us further.
Leah, I want to know something. I think Steve Batt was actually a little bit hurt that man did not give him a 10.
Well, you know, a lot of chefs are both tender and tough.
You got it.
I have one quick question before you go, though, Danny. Have the general state of the economy and rising food prices hurt Miriam's Kitchen at all?
Yes, they have. Steve Batt says that about half his food comes from corporate-type donations, and corporations are not donating as much as they used to. Now, the church where they work gives him the money to buy the rest of the food, and because, obviously, chicken and meat and fish are so expensive now, he can buy a lot less than he used to with the same amount of money. So he says he's making a lot more vegetarian brunches.
NPR's Daniel Zwerdling. Thanks a lot, Danny.
Thanks, Leanne.
And you can get the recipe for strawberry shortcake at Miriam's Kitchen by going to our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.